Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
One of the highlights of the last month or so has been the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary, and our next guest, David Aldridge of The Athletic, has been all over it. For those of you who know David Aldridge, you're talking about a guy who has been around the NBA for a long time. You could see him on NBA TV, ESPN, NBA.com, The Washington Post, The Philadelphia Inquirer. Now he's with The Athletic, and he's joining us now. It's been a lot of fun to watch that documentary. Are you enjoying it as a viewer, David?
I am. It's been great, and I'm happy that younger basketball fans who didn't see Jordan play, maybe didn't see Bird or Magic play, get a chance to see how incredible the competition was back then, and how I say hatred. Other people don't agree with that. I think those guys hated each other and wanted to dominate each other, and that made the basketball so much more compelling because the drama was real. I mean, it wasn't made up. It wasn't manufactured. There was genuine dislike amongst a lot of those great players for one another.
Dislike, and then I love to the intensity, because, I got to be honest, I grew up watching Jordan. I was in high school when he made his debut, and David, I got to tell you, I forgot how good he was, and I'm watching him now, and I'm going, you know what? This isn't a debate for me. He's the greatest. Like, I don't see what he's doing on the court. I don't see that anymore.
Well, I mean, you're right, but there are reasons for that, and they're not all, it's not some screed against today's game. Today's game is great. I mean, I think it's terrific. It's exciting for fans. Certainly the shooting is significantly better and deeper in terms of players that can shoot from deep than before. I do think the demise of the traditional big man is not as, good a thing as others do, because I think big men are what built this league, and there should be a place for them in any future iteration of the league. But that aside, Jordan is the best I've ever seen. Now, I didn't see Bill Russell play. I didn't see Wilt play. I didn't see Oscar Robertson play. But I accept what people who did see them play have told me over the years about how great those players were. And so I can only go by what I've seen over the last three decades. And to me, Jordan's the best I've ever seen. And it's not particularly close.
David Aldridge of The Athletic is with us. Episode 7 and 8 focused a lot on Jordan as a teammate. You had a great analysis of this, compared it to a burning furnace that couldn't be turned off. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's very hard. I use the analogy of a blast furnace when it comes to Michael and his competitiveness, his anger, all of those things that would come out on the basketball court. And it was very difficult, I think, for him to turn it down. I think Roy Williams said something like that early in the documentary as well. So I just think that's what led to some of the kind of real deep, dark, constant belittling, criticism, teasing of teammates and other people in the organization. That cut some people the wrong way. I mean, some folks did not accept that as part of getting better. And it was difficult for him, and that's why he would put anything in there, including stuff that he made up, to stoke himself to anger and to fury and rage on the court. That's just kind of how he played. And I don't make a value judgment on that. I just note that his will was greater than anybody else's will I've ever seen. Because I saw lots of games where he didn't shoot the ball well, right? But he still impacted every game. Somehow, some way, he had an impact on every game I ever saw him play. And I can't say that about anybody else who I've seen playing. I've seen a lot of people play over the last three decades.
You've seen some incredible athletes, some incredible basketball players that maybe just were missing that X factor that Jordan had as a competitor. Where do you think that was born in Michael Jordan?
You know, that's a great question, and I don't have a good answer for it because, you know, I guess they say in the documentary that his brother Larry was the one that really kind of drove him, and they had some fierce competitions. And I understand that if that's where they think it came from, if that's where he thinks it came from in terms of that kind of brother-sibling rivalry. You always want to do better than your brother, especially if he's older. And I get that. But, man, I mean, that was early in his life, and he had that throughout his college and pro career. And, you know, it's hard for me to believe that that was still at the center of why he was so competitive. But he was incredibly competitive. Kobe, to me, is the only person that comes close to that in terms of competitive will and wanting to win and wanting to do anything to win. But Jordan, again, to me, is head and shoulders above everybody else.
When Jordan left the game and then came back, you tweeted about this yesterday. I think that first game back was a noon tip-off in Indianapolis, and you knew you had to be there for that. What do you remember of that time?
Well, he wasn't good in that game, as you might expect. I mean, he was, I think it was 7-28 from the floor, and considering he had been off for a year and a half, 2 years, I mean, that's to be expected. But it was, you know, it was right back to the theater of Michael Jordan, which is, you know, the arena's packed. Everybody's watching every move that he makes. All of the attention of the other team is on him. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't a very good game for a lot of different reasons. But, yeah, he didn't play well, but the circus was back in town. You know, I mean, it was just, you just knew that was going to happen. You know, Larry Brown had the great line, and I wasn't there. I think Sam Smith told me this years later, you know, after the game, everybody, of course, waited for Jordan. So there's 400, 500 media in the press room waiting for Jordan. And I guess three or four reporters went and talked to Larry about the game, the actual game that was played. And Larry said, you know, I can't believe it. The Beatles are back together and you guys want to talk to me. You know, that's kind of what it was like, you know. So it was just a sense of this incredible figure that just took so much attention and drew so many casual fans and non-basketball fans in, was back on the floor. And I went to a few of those first games. I'm still angry with myself that I didn't go to Double Nickel because I should have gone to that. And I was going to go, and I didn't go, and I'm mad at myself for that. But I went to like four or five of the first seven or eight games of his return, and it was the same everywhere, no matter if they were home or away. You know, there was just a buzz in the building when the Bulls, and in particular Jordan, was on the floor.
We're talking to David Aldridge of The Athletic. He's covered the NBA for a long time, member of the Naismith Hall of Fame. David, when you talk about Magic and Larry and Jordan, there are some episodes in this where, you know, even my wife is into this series, and she, you know, she's not a diehard basketball fan, but she's drawn in by the emotion that Jordan shows, I think, and you see him crying. We see him crying on the documentary. How many players have you seen cry over the years? How common is that with a superstar?
Oh, well, I mean, it depends on the context, obviously. I mean, I've seen a lot of them crying after big wins or sometimes big losses. But, you know, I have seen guys get choked up in similar situations because I think it's very difficult to explain why they behave the way they behave. You know, it's hard. They want people to understand it, and it's hard to explain because most people just can't get there. Most people aren't wired like those guys are. I've said this many times over the last few weeks because people have asked me about it, about the, you know, that era. And if you saw the HBO documentary on Magic and Bird, the Courtship of Rivals documentary, my favorite part of that by far is when Bird is talking about the 84 finals, which the Celtics won. They beat the Lakers in seven games. And, you know, Magic had a couple of really bad moments in that series. Really the only time he played poorly in a finals. And Bird is ecstatic about that. He's ecstatic. He says, I was so happy that he failed. And it was almost as exciting to me that I won, that he lost, and he was miserable. And I loved that. That was great. Made my summer. And that's exactly how they were. How they all were. They didn't want to just beat the other guy. They wanted him humiliated, you know? And so, but that's not most people. I don't think LeBron wants to humiliate opponents. I think he just wants to win the game, you know? And maybe that's healthier. I grant you. Maybe that's a healthier way to approach it, you know? But that's what made those days so great for me, because the drama was real. I mean, it was not manufactured. It was not, you know, WWE. It was real, you know, real animosity between those teams and those players. And while the scoring, I should say, wasn't as good, the basketball was pretty damn good. So that's why I think that's why guys cry, I think, in those situations, because it's hard to explain. And they know that, I think they understand that it's cost them friendships and relationships over the years that they would have liked to have had, whether it's teammates or other players around the league. And it doesn't mean they never talked to other people. They did, but they also wanted to dominate those guys. And it was a different emotion. And I think they get frustrated because other people don't understand them, you know?
Yes. So,
you know, and I remember, and this was long, I remember Isaiah was on a ESPN special once, and they were talking about the finals that they lost and to the Lakers. And I think it was Dan Patrick was asking them, you know, why would you, you know, they were famously after game seven, he and Lambert sat in the shower and were sobbing after game seven. And Dan was trying to get him to explain it. And Isaiah was like, you just wouldn't understand. You just wouldn't understand, you know, why it's so gut-wrenching when you lose something like that. And I think that's what Jordan, maybe that's what got him, you know, teared up, is that he couldn't explain it in a way that normal people would understand.
David Aldridge of The Athletic is with us. We saw some news today with the players' union reps reaching out to their teammates, trying to gauge, hey, are we going to return this season? Do you want to return this season? How are you feeling about it? What do you think comes of that?
I think that the majority of players want to play. Just in talking to people over the last several weeks, you know, for different reasons, some financial, of course, but, you know, there are just a lot of guys, especially with the playoff teams, that want some resolution, right? I mean, they do this to win the championship. You know, that's the whole point of it. And I think a lot of those guys on the better teams want to see that resolved one way or the other. So my guess is that more players than not want to play. I certainly believe that a lot of guys have a lot of questions, though. It's a yes, but maybe answer.
Yeah.
In terms of how this is going to work. And certainly if you're asking players to bring their families with them for multiple weeks, they're going to want to have some real answers about how safe it's going to be, what the testing is going to be like. And I don't think the league has those answers yet. I mean, I think that's something they're still trying to figure out, exactly how this is going to work. And so, while I think they will play eventually, because more players want to play, and certainly more owners want to play, and the league wants to play, and ESPN and Turner want them to play. So when all of those oars are pulling in the same direction, I tend to think you're going to get the result that most of those people want. I just don't know what it's going to look like. And I think that's the, you know, the sticking point right now as they start to try to gear up again.
We're talking to David Aldridge of The Athletic. David, I really appreciate you making time for us. Before I cut you loose, this documentary footage has been in a vault for a couple of decades. My wife, who's in television is going, how did this not see the light of day? When you heard this was going down and they come to talk to you, are you like immediately going, at last someone's doing this? Or what was your reaction?
Well, yeah, because I knew a lot of people at NBAE. You know, I know Andy Thompson pretty well and a lot of other people who were at NBAE. And it was kind of like this, you know, this big epic Moby Dick type of tale. You know, all you would hear is, we got 1 million feet of film on that last year. And we don't have anything to do. We can't air it anywhere, right? And it was just a frustration for a lot of people who had worked that year and really had done a lot of work trying to get that to fruition. But, I mean, essentially, it became obvious, I think, to most people, and I think correctly so, there had to be some context to all of that tape, right? To all of that film, I guess that's how old it was. And the only way you could get context is to get Jordan in the chair. And he wouldn't sit in the chair for 20 years. He just wouldn't do it. And, you know, and they took runs at him over the years. And I think it took this particular production company that had done, you know, the outstanding documentary on Andre the Giant, which is really well done. I mean, it was just a really well done doc, and some other really good documentaries, to kind of convince him that they would they would give him the space to tell his story. But they would also, I think, at least try to hold him to account on some things. You know, I've seen what Ken Burns has said about it, and there's some truth to it, but I'd rather have half a loaf in this case than no loaf at all. And so the fact that this is finally getting out and people are seeing some of this great stuff that they shot at practices and in the trainer's room and all of those things, it gives you a real sense of what it was like to be there in those last months and weeks of that dynasty. And I think that's worth doing.
David Aldridge, I appreciate you. You're the best. Thanks for what you do, man.
My pleasure, man. Good talking to you. Please stay safe out there.
All right, you too. David Aldridge, now with The Athletic. You'll see him all over the documentary. If you haven't watched it yet, you need to watch it. Look, there's a lot of awful things that have come out of the last 5-6 weeks. We've got bad news today about, you know, Los Angeles County and some other places. And Twitter just announced, the head of Twitter just announced that they're going to allow all their employees to work from home. That's going to be an indefinite, maybe a permanent thing. I think, you know, the earth underneath our feet has been shifting, right? And I think one of the positive distractions that we have had without sports is this Michael Jordan documentary. I've looked forward to it every weekend. I want to go back and rewatch episodes 7 and 8. I'll rewatch the whole thing after I have all the episodes in one place. I hope you're checking it out as well. Coming up, our big splash. Leave it here. Mo Williams, former Blazers guard, has been named the head basketball coach at Alabama State. That's some news there, former Blazer, but it is not our big splash. It is not the one thing that you need to know across the sports landscape. We do that every day on the show. We do it right here.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where? Down there.
The Big Splash! Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, the one thing you need to know today is that the NBA is exploring its options, and it's turned to the players finally. Players Association reps have been asked to meet and poll their players on their rosters, on their teams, and ask them more or less, hey, what's the bottom line here? What are we talking about? How safe do you feel playing? I think it's a question that needed to be asked a long time ago. I think players probably weren't going to be honest if they were asked in a public forum by a media member. So I'm encouraged that they're finally asking some players point blank, hey, what do you think of this? Do you feel safe playing? I think these are all important questions. And by the way, they're not going to have any games if the players aren't on board. I could tell you that the owners might think they're going to put the players in a bubble, but if the players don't want to be in that bubble, they're not going. They drive the bus in the NBA. The Players Association, too powerful. So ultimately, I do think that the Players Association polling the players, this is a positive development. Because if the unanimous feedback is, yes, we're all about playing games, yes, we want to play games, then so be it. I think this is great. We'll get some games. The owners will probably figure out how to do it. But until then, I think they're in a position where we just don't know. And that is the one thing you want to know and the one thing you need to know today. The ground underneath us, I think all of us kind of feel like we're in the same boat. I think it's really easy to fall into a trap where you are seeing negatives. I know I've been guilty of it at different points in the last 5 or 6 weeks where I look and I go, oh, that doesn't look good. Oh, that's not a positive development. Oh, how are they going to do that? And I find myself falling down that, going down that rabbit hole. But ultimately, if you're a sports fan, look, sports is not as important as regular American life. Sports pales into comparison to your health and your family's health. And I do think, like, we can find some hopeful angles when it comes to how they're planning to play sports, because I think they exist. I think there are some hopeful angles that are out there. And if you are a sports fan looking for them, I look no further than the Pac-12 conference that's trying to explore how do they play games if college kids are not allowed on campus, and can they do it? Larry Scott had some comments on it on the Dan Patrick Show today. I'm going to play them coming up after this break, and we're going to talk about it. Look, I'm not entirely positive that Larry Scott's going to be the conference commissioner 5 years from now. I also, though, think he speaks for the university presidents and chancellors, and we got to pay attention when he talks. You got to read the tea leaves, because he's essentially a puppet for them. And if he's speaking, if he's coming out and he's saying, look, bottom line, here's where we stand. I don't see this. I do see this. I think we can read sort of the direction that the conference is going to take. And to the rest of us, like, keep breathing, keep swimming, keep churning. I saw a video last night of a guy on a boat. He's out in the middle of the water, out in the middle of nowhere. He sees he appears to be an otter or some kind of sea mammal that is swimming along. And as he pulls the boat up next to it, it's not. It's a bear out in the middle of nowhere, just going for a swim. Probably got in over its head, probably was chasing a salmon of some kind, and realized, like, holy hell, I'm in the middle of nowhere. But the bear just keeps swimming. It just keeps swimming until it finds land. So use that as encouragement today. Keep swimming. Keep churning. Keep paddling. Whatever it is, whatever the case is. Because I think, you know, a lot of small business owners out there are in a similar predicament where they're going, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should be, what should I be doing? What should my approach be when it comes to this stuff? But I think ultimately, if you are a college football fan, your approach should be one of, all right, restrained enthusiasm. How about that? Can you get some restrained enthusiasm? Because I'm finding that as well, where I'm going, look, there's obvious problems here. There's obvious logistical issues to overcome. But I think in the end, like, if we're all being real with each other, the only clean way out of this thing is for us all to band together and find a path that works. And if it's about playing games in an area where you can play games and keep people safe, great. But first and foremost, keep your family safe. Take care of each other. I think ultimately that's what we can do. All right, coming up at 1 o'clock hour, we'll start it with Punch and Audio. It is the best sound from all around. I got some big time thoughts on some things that were said.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.